From the Professional Disc Golf Association, this is PDGA Radio News.
Welcome back for another episode of PDGA Radio. I'm Steve Hill. I'm joined by Sarah Sinclair. Sarah, how was your National Disc Golf Day / weekend?
The day itself was pretty uneventful because it was pouring rain, like it has been in Nashville for the past 2 weeks. But we made up for it by hitting up our favorite Nashville course, Cedar Hill, and played a pretty solid round there yesterday. So that was fun. We've been mostly playing on our property, so it was nice to get to a legit course. And there's a lot of tunnel shots there that kind of mimic Idlewild. Much less elevation, though, so I wanted to see how I was doing on those tunnel shots, and the answer is not that great, so hopefully I can figure it out in the next few days.
Yeah, well, you got a couple days ahead of you. That's good.
We'll
talk Idlewild. That's coming up this weekend back on the Disc Golf Pro Tour. Let's give a shout-out, though, to the people who played in our National Disc Golf Day virtual tournament. 4,362 players over the weekend. That resulted in, I had the number, it was like 9,507 rated rounds.
Wow.
Across the whole event, 33 states, 50 events total, and I know we did some picks, Sarah, and I don't think either of us won. Andrew Marweed won in MPO with a 1060.8 average over his three rounds at the River City Open. Mm-hmm. Took out Kevin Jones by half a point on the ratings front.
Wow.
And then Vanessa Van Dyken on the FPO side, also at the River City Open. So congrats to both of them. I mean, this is just like a bragging rights fun thing, not really a they didn't win anything other than, you know, seeing the name at the top of the list. And same with the several other divisions. But hey, you got to put your name on social media in one of our posts today, and we hope everyone just had a great time. It was really cool seeing so many people sharing on social media throughout the weekend, just their love for the sport and getting out and playing and trying to get new people on board. So we hope you had a wonderful National Disc Golf Day, and we will be back for some more next year. Also on National Disc Golf Day, Sarah, we released the results of the PDGA Board of Directors elections, and this is where I go in post-production and put in a drum roll.
Hope you actually do that.
Maybe I'll try and remember to do that. but we had our two board members were elected, and they were... Sarah, did you look at the results? Do you know these results?
I sure did.
All right, so Sarah, why don't you give the good news? Why don't you tell the people who they elected?
Yes, so Will Schusterick got almost 50% of the votes. Wasn't it like 48 or 49% of the votes?
Yeah, 40 and some change for sure.
Yeah, incredible. And then the other was the incumbent, Nate Heinold.
Yeah. 47.99 for Will, 28.28 for Nate. That's a good rhyme right there. Congratulations to both those guys. I know they're going to bring their best to the board of directors. And thank you again to everyone who ran. Again, we had like 17 candidates.
That's right.
The thing that I was most excited about, Sarah, was the participation numbers, and part of my job was beating people over the head for the last couple weeks trying to get them to vote. And, you know, it worked. We had 22.82%, which is almost 10% more than last year. We were a few votes away from having an exact 10%. So if you voted and you paid attention to all the stuff we were doing, thank you very much. You made a difference. And now hopefully you've put some people in office who will continue to make a difference for the PDGA. Also, on top of this, our state and provincial coordinators were elected, so you can go and see who's representing your state. There were some people who were kind of wondering why there was only half. As a reminder, if you're not super keyed into how the elections work, which is totally fine, the state and provincial coordinators, we kind of split them in half every year. So they serve two-year terms, and they're voted on half of them every other year. So that's why you only see half of those. So good job, everyone, for voting, exactly 11,821 of you. I know all of you are listening to this show right now, so thank you.
Also, I'm Although I'm very sad that we didn't get to 100% participation, it does mean that I don't have to eat gas station fried chicken. So
that's right. I forgot about that. Yeah, I I do want to point out, like,
that was tough. That was a tough one.
One of the fun things about the elections is like the write-in votes.
Yes.
Because we do get quite a few write-ins, and I noticed Brody Smith got four write-ins. Jeff Spring, director of the Disc Golf Pro Tour, got a nice write-in.
Listener Sarah Nicholson got at least one, I saw.
Nice, there we go. Yeah. So kind of fun to see. Oh, a couple Nate Sextons here. Two Nate Sextons and an Nathan Sexton. And then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 Paul Macbeths. So Paul's still beating Brody. we got a Seppo Paiu, a Terry Miller, quite a few Trevor Harbolts. Wow, Trevor Harbolt would have actually beat Paul Macbeth in this year.
Wow.
Didn't know he logged a little write-in campaign. So it's kind of fun just to see how many people like put their friends or people they know in there. I don't see any Mickey Mouses. I don't see any, other elected officials who were trying to get into disc golf. So, but that's fun. Oh, DJ Heck Yeah from Innova. So go check out the list, people. It's fun. You can see all the election results. But again, that's probably the biggest thing that came out of Saturday was our election results, along with National Disc Golf Day. So that was good. And then Sarah, just running into this week, we're already starting off with some news. And I guess this kind of part of this came out on Friday, and I wasn't aware because I was wrapped up in National Disc Golf Day prep and stuff. But the MVP Open on the Disc Golf Pro Tour has moved its dates. It was supposed to be the weekend of August 28th through 30th. It is now going to be September 11th through 13th, the original day of the Delaware Disc Golf Challenge, which is no longer this year. But basically, the main reason they did this is because the Northeast, Massachusetts and stuff like that, is requiring, you know, players to quarantine, or not players, it's requiring anyone coming into Massachusetts to quarantine for 14 days if they're coming from certain areas. And the next, you know, the next big event, or the we have Idlewild, and then we have Ledgestone. Yep. And that would not have given people enough time to go from Ledgestone to MVP and quarantine for 2 weeks.
That's right.
So the plan now is go from Ledgestone, if you're a touring player, to go from Ledgestone to the Green Mountain Championship. And if you're up in Vermont for a couple weeks, you can more easily get into Massachusetts. I do believe it looks like the DGPT, it says the DGPT will outline all quarantine and testing options for competitors in the Green Mountain Championship. So I think there's also some restrictions for Vermont that people are going to have to adhere to, but it sounds like it's going to be a little easier. And, you know, I mean, I don't know, maybe everyone can get a couple weeks to chill out at Smug's. I don't know.
That would be amazing. Actually, Katrina texted me a couple days ago and asked about, so after Ledgestone, they're going to leave their RV here and just drive up there and stay at Smug's for 2 weeks, I guess. Okay. And I was just like, yeah, whatever, because we've got tons of room here. But that all makes sense now, why they don't want to, you know, use all the gas and drive up there. And that's, I mean, it's pretty crazy. That's like pretty restricting for players. You've got to go up and stay there, and it's not the worst place in the world to stay if you've ever been there before. It's like a pretty nice resort with beautiful scenery, Ben and Jerry's down the road.
Yeah.
Not the worst place to quarantine, in my opinion.
Yeah, so it says travelers arriving in Vermont in a personal vehicle may complete either a 14-day quarantine or a 7-day quarantine followed by a negative test in their home state. So, I mean, yeah, it just sounds pretty convoluted right now. Yeah. But I do know Jeff Spring has been on this stuff the whole time with the Pro Tour to get these things in place. And Sarah, there's actually, in my opinion, a little bit bigger news that came out of the Pro Tour today, besides this rescheduling. Obviously rescheduling an event is a big deal as well, but the news that I saw that really stuck out to me was that the Pro Tour is now going to require that masks, all persons including competitors, have to wear a face covering within 15 feet of the teen area. Now you can take it off when you want, when you're throwing, if you want to, but we're not going to see, or at least we shouldn't see, players kind of milling about the tee pad talking to each other without masks on. You're playing in a disc golf pro tour event this weekend, Sarah. Give me your take. What's your first reaction to that?
I mean, I'm not super by it, and honestly,
say that again. You kind of cut out a little bit. You're not super what by it?
Oh, sorry. I'm not super surprised by it, and honestly, just seeing some of the footage from some of the latest events, people. Well, I guess I'm speaking directly about Ellen. Like, she walked up to the first tee and had her mask on, and then pulled it down just to tee. And I don't know. I think that's just being very safe, and I don't want to think that people have cooties, but you have really no idea what people are doing and where they've been and who they're surrounding themselves with and where they're staying and all of those different things. So it kind of just, it makes you and other people feel a bit more safe, in my opinion. I have no issue with it.
Yeah, I agree. Honestly, I think it's great. I think it's something that needed to happen. You know, I love all these players and I love this sport. But we are in a pretty privileged position right now, Sarah, I think. Like, you know, look at Major League Baseball. They've got games, all kinds of games getting postponed and canceled and delayed because they're having outbreaks. Several sports can't even function right now. So, like, we're able to be outside. We're able to function. But we are also still a small kind of fringe sport that maybe doesn't have a ton of resources. And if there is somehow an outbreak on the Disc Golf Pro Tour, that could be devastating for the players, for the tour, for the I don't want to get too alarmist and say the sport. I think the sport obviously would survive, but you know, if all you have to do is wear a mask so you can go out and play, I don't think that's a problem. And I will say, I think the players, at least the ones that we can see on footage, have just been too lax. Like, they're not social distancing on the tee pad like they're supposed to. And they're not, you know, going solo into the circle. Like, they're walking by each other and they're being close and they're talking to each other between holes and stuff. And, like, you know, sometimes you have to put restrictions in place if you want to do and have nice things. And I think this is one of those situations. I applaud Jeff Spring for making the move because, again, it's all about safety. It's all about sustainability. You know, the coronavirus is still very, very much a thing. Like, this is not, you know, like, we're back up and running and we're playing again, but, and places are open and everything, but there's still many people getting this, and it has very real impacts on people. And yeah, we're outside, but if we can be outside and be safer, let's do it. The other thing with this is any spectators, I believe, for phase two events, which I don't know if Idlewild is considered. Is that phase one or phase two?
Phase one.
Okay, so no spectators. So phase two events, which includes Ledgestone, spectators are now going to be required to wear a face mask, which, again, you want to come out and watch people throw some frisbees real far, all you got to do is put a piece of cloth across your face. It'll be all right. So
there. So I just got the kind of welcome overview email from Jeff and team today as a player with the caddy guide and everything else. And there's another requirement too that I think is really good. Practice groups are limited to 5 people. And if they see you in a group of more than 5 people, then they're going to ask you to leave the property for the day. So they're being stringent about this. And I think that's good. I mean, just not allowing a lot of wiggle room and people taking advantage. And unfortunately, it kind of stinks for some of the younger players whose parents may be traveling with them. And because it's not 5 players, it's 5 people. So it could be you and your buddy and 3 other people playing.
I don't know, man. I hate playing with more than like 2 people anyway.
Oh, me too. Especially
give me that,
at Idlewild.
Give me that quicker practice round. Yeah.
Oh yeah, I don't want to go more than 4 people. I'm good with that.
Yeah, no.
Especially on this course. Yeah.
But again, like, I think, you know, it's unfortunate that we're kind of in this situation where this is viewed as like bravery, but like it is kind of a bold, brave thing for the tour to be doing, and I totally give them credit for it. And the other part of this that I think about is like the Disc Golf Pro Tour is the kind of outward face of disc golf right now. Like, you know, we've got PDGA sanctioned events, but like the national tour is not running. We don't have any majors right now.
Right.
And so there isn't like a chance for the PDGA, quote unquote, itself to kind of lead outwardly by example. And this is a chance for the Pro Tour to do that, to show people that, hey, it's not hard to disc golf and wear a mask. So I think it's cool. I'm super happy they're doing it. I don't want to belabor the point because I know people are burnt out on talking about coronavirus stuff, but this is happening in the sport. We are not, we don't exist in a bubble, unfortunately. We exist in the world where this is still a thing. And so I think it's cool that the Pro Tour is taking those precautions. And I hope that the players all are welcoming and accepting of that, Sarah. I'm going to be curious to hear about your experience this weekend at Idlewild.
Yeah, we'll see. I just hope that, you know, on top of all of the other things that we have to do as a self, what's the word I'm looking for?
Officiating?
Yeah, self-officiating sport. You know, there's things that you sometimes have to call out that you see from other players, and it doesn't happen often. I'll say in these big pro events, especially when you're playing with touring players, but I really, really hope that this isn't one of those things that we are going to have to kind of call each other on. I hope that everyone has respect for the rule and respect for everybody else and just falls in line, because I am typically that person that is the one to speak up, and I do it in the nicest way possible. I pride myself on being able to deliver like confrontational messages in a kind way to people, especially on a disc golf course, but it's still awkward. Like, it's still an awkward thing to do, and it makes everyone else in the group feel awkward when there's any little bit of conflict. And I just really hope, if you're listening to this and you're playing Idlewild, just wear the dang mask. Don't
Sarah,
make other if people.
Sarah, if you happen to, like, you know, send me names or anything, I'm not above shaming people. I know you are. I'll shame some people.
I'll pass the names along so that you can shame them, because I actually have to play with these people.
I know, right? Exactly.
But no, I'm just really interested into finding out if people will respect it, and I don't want to be the bad cop and have to.
No, you shouldn't have to. You shouldn't have to in this situation. The other part of this is, like, I'm actually a little bit disappointed in a lot of these players / their sponsors for not taking advertising advantage of this yet.
Like, what, as far as masks
slap
go?
Slap some logos across
your
face.
Innova has. I already bought Innova, okay, so I'm going to be wearing, Innova has one. I think it comes in several different colors, and they sold out right after I bought mine, but it's like dry fit material.
Good.
And it's got the slit in the back so that you can put filters in there.
Ooh,
oh, yeah,
nice.
That's good. I have like a child-sized head, so when I've bought... No, it's... I thought maybe I did... But this whole mask thing now has confirmed that I definitely do, because we bought a pack of adult size masks at Walgreens or something, and they don't even begin to fit me. They
oh man, we bought some adult size masks that were too big as well. There's some people with large faces out there.
But the Innova ones, you can adjust them behind your ear, so they're perfect.
Nice. That's cool. Yeah. No, I apologize then. I probably shouldn't. I'm not sitting here on the manufacturer's websites all day, every day. So maybe manufacturers are selling these. I hope they are. It makes sense,
yeah.
Right? It's a good, I mean, I'm not trying to be cynical. It's a good move. Like,
no, it is.
Get
yeah,
your name on.
Super smart.
I figured Paul McBeth would have had his branded stuff and, you know, all these guys.
Why not? Jump on it.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, it's a good opportunity. So, you know, when life gives you lemons, make those lemonades out of it. All right. Anyway, did I just say make those lemonades, Sarah?
You did. I thought it was funny, though. I'm just.
It's late in the day. I promise you, I've only had LaCroix for this podcast today, but it is late in the day. Maybe no coffee.
Take it easy. It's a Monday night.
I know. All right, let's do this. Let's take a break, and we're going to talk to our events coordinator, Todd Lyon, who, kind of in this vein, he's run some events now with these new COVID guidelines, and we're going to talk to him about how those have been going. And then when Sarah and I get back, we will do some Birdie Fuel coffee hot rounds, which I need right now. So we'll be back in just a moment on PDGA Radio. All right, joining us now on the program is Todd Lyon. Todd is the PDGA Events Coordinator. He's out with a new article on PDGA.com called The New Normal for Running PDGA-Sanctioned Tournaments, and that's what we're going to be talking about today. So, Todd, thanks for taking some time out. How's everything going on your side of the world?
Everything over here in South Carolina is actually doing pretty good. The temperature broke about 4 degrees, so we're almost below 90 now.
Hey, there you go.
I don't know why. The hurricanes always pushes a little cold air up in, so it's nice when you're not living on the coast.
Yeah, very nice, very nice. So, you know, your part of your job, obviously, is going out to larger events and kind of helping them run smoothly, but you also run your own tournaments, and that's giving you a chance to really test out a lot of the PDGA's new kind of COVID-19 protocols and use really some of the technology that has been deployed to help tournaments run now. So, you know, with this article, I'm looking at it and I see a really big takeaway from you. And it's just kind of there was a big aha moment. So kind of walk me through that. Tell me what the big aha moment was for you when you got back out there and started running tournaments again.
Right. So like all tournament directors in the world, the first half of the year was a pretty big bummer. You know, we had a few good tournaments lined up and, you know, we unfortunately had to cancel all of them due to the COVID pandemic. And then as soon as we came back online and started running tournaments, you know, we have to do, I call it COVID protocol. You know, the avoid large crowds and try not to, you know, touch everything too many times. And, you know, all the fun stuff that we used to do in tournaments, like coughing on each other, we're not allowed to do anymore.
Sure, yeah.
And, you know, so after thinking about how to run a COVID protocol tournament and then getting out there and doing it, really within about 5 minutes of the tournament starting, I said to myself, why haven't I been doing it this way the whole time? You know, everything that I've been doing for the last 5 or 7 years that, you know, I learned from Christine and Christine learned from Sarah and Sarah learned from Zach and Zach learned from Renee, and we're using 20-year-old processes. And, you know, we've never had a need to rethink why we've been running tournaments because they run fine.
Yeah.
You know, there's 3,000 C tiers run in 2019. And some of them are probably run by guys who have been running it the same way they were running the tournament in 1992. But on the other hand, you know, we're in the future now and there's new ways to do things. And, you know, I kind of saw it as an opportunity to reevaluate my practices and see if I can do it better.
What's been the biggest change for you so far? I mean, besides the obvious, you know, spreading people out and trying to make things contactless, what's been the biggest way that you've done that so far?
Probably the biggest way is just really embracing all different forms of technology that I have available to us. You know, instead of having players group up in the morning and have a big players meeting where I'm standing on a picnic table shouting at them, you know, just do it ahead of time. Film it, put it up on YouTube. You can post it 4 days before the event so players can watch it at their leisure. They can watch it multiple times if they want to. And then in addition to that type of thing, which I could probably talk all day about players meetings on YouTube, but also digital scorecard is absolutely fantastic. And, you know, we've been pushing that for a year, year and a half now. But, you know, it's really getting to the point where players are used to using digital scorecard, and that works with the recent updates in Tournament Manager. And we're at a point where you can do a paperless tournament with no problems at all, do a players meeting posted on YouTube 3 days ahead of time, send out all the rule sheets and, you know, players meeting information in pre-event emails, and you practically just never have to group everybody together at all. You can just do everything ahead of time, and then when they show up in the morning of the tournament's ready to go, they can just go out to their hole and get ready to play.
Now let's pretend I'm like an old school TD here, and I hear the words digital scorecard, and I'm like, no, man, this isn't going to work for me. I'm used to doing things the way I do it. How do you convince me? What can you say to maybe get me to come to the dark side, if you will, of the newer technology?
I mean, really, the probably the most convincing thing is other old school 2D TDs who have made the jump. And pretty much everybody who's done it has really come back saying, oh my gosh, I can't believe I didn't do this years ago. You know, there's guys who have been running, like I said, great tournaments for the last 30 years, and they're still using the spreadsheet version of the TD report. And, you know, not to be condescending, but, you know, we're in the future, and doing the internet version of stuff really makes things better. I promise that it works great. You know, I've always prided myself on, you know, even doing the paper methods, you know, getting scores turned around really fast. And like, oh my gosh, I got the scores uploaded to PDGA in under 10 minutes from the last scorecard being turned in the morning. And I thought, yeah, I was, you know, pretty awesome for that. And nowadays with digital scorecard, they're uploaded literally the instant the scorecards are done with no effort from the TD. And then you can turn around starting groups or hole assignments for the next round within 5 minutes of the end of the first round. And I think that's just fantastic. You know, before the players have even left the parking lot to go to lunch, you've already told them the starting time for their next round, what hole they're going to be starting on, and who their card mates are going to be. So they can, you know, just having that amount of information ahead of time really just makes life easier for the players, and being able to do it in 5 minutes makes life easier for the TD as well. You know, it's a win-win on both for both groups of people.
I was going to say, what has the player feedback been like? You know, is everyone adopting it readily? Are people, you know, are they okay with not having the large gatherings? Have they been relatively understanding so they can just get out there and compete?
Generally, everything that I've heard has been overall positive. You know, some players do like to come to the tournament for the, you know, the convention aspect. You might even call it the party atmosphere on some tournaments. But, you know, for the hour before the tournament starts and you're all hanging out around Tournament Central, you know, giving high fives to people that you haven't seen in a year or two, you know, that's great and all. But, you know, on the other hand, if you're starting on hole 10 on the other side of the course, it's a 15-minute walk, you know, you just hate coming all the way back to Tournament Central listening to a player's meeting that you kind of barely want to listen to in the first place, and then walk all the way back out to hole 10, you know, for the 2-minute warning. So it's, I think I strayed away from your question a little
bit.
That's
okay.
But, you know, players, once they kind of get used to the overall concepts and get used to using their cell phone to keep scores, they've really enjoyed it. You know, every player I've talked to has said, you know, oh man, you know, the online players meeting has been great. You know, this is the new normal. You know, even old school players, you know, Alan Beaver was at one of my tournaments and was like, oh man, you know, the online players meeting is the way to go from here on out. You know, yeah, no reason to do it in person.
You know, the one thing I think about with all this is players packs.
Right.
You know, that's a big physical thing that people are going to want. You know, a lot of times people are thumbing through discs to try and find the one they want. How did you handle that? And how do you propose tournament directors kind of handled that during the pandemic?
Yeah, well, that's absolutely one of the hardest ones. You know, for my local tournament, my standard players pack has always just been, you know, a $15 voucher to the on-site merchandise vendor, which works well. You know, the pandemic stuff, you're like, you don't want 55 amateurs all crammed around three tables, you know, flipping through every disc and,
right,
you know, touching every disc. And, you know, it's kind of a shame if you have a local vendor who likes to come out to your events, but you can always switch over to online vendors. You know, well, Sun King or Discs Unlimited or whatever all those online shops are, a lot of them will have options of use us for your payouts, use us for your players packs. And, you know, one of the other challenges with player packs is, goes hand in hand with one of the things that I tried, was eliminating player check-in. You know, you don't even have to come to Tournament Central in the morning to sign the waiver and look at the board. It's just show up and go to your starting hole. And in that case, the players packs was probably my hardest part of the day. You know, half the people still came to Tournament Central and grabbed the little slip of paper with their name on it. That was their players pack. And then half the people, you know, I had to flag down in the middle of round two and say, hey, you better pick up your players pack before you leave today, because that'd be a real shame for you to miss out on, you know, some of the value of the tournament.
So, I mean, with the player check-in, that's, I did want to ask you about that too, because I know there is kind of a fine line right now, right? Like, we can, on the one hand, you don't want everyone to come and swarm the tables and check in. On the other hand, there are parts of the competition manual for certain tiers that require check-in. So where do you fall on that, and what's your suggestion right now for how to best address that? If you have to obviously adhere to the comp manual.
Right. You know, I like to give, let's call it the freedom to TDs to, you know, try their own things at their own tournaments. You know, at most of your local tournaments, your C tiers and stuff, you're not necessarily required to check in. You know, the TD is not forced to do a check in. And there's a certain part of me that says, you know, do we really have to do check in at all? You know, not to fight against the competition manual, but sometimes you might not even have to check in at all. You know, if one dude fails to show up, is it the end of the world? You know, there's three other guys already at the starting hole ready to go, and one guy doesn't show up, and, you know, it gives you 30 seconds of anxiety. You say, oh man, John was supposed to start with us. Where the heck is he? Oh well, I guess we're moving on now. So, you know, some TDs might think that just not even doing check-in at their tournaments works. And I didn't do it at my recent ones that I ran at the beginning of July, and it was actually great, you know, from a TD's perspective.
Yeah.
You know, I'm busy trying to make sure that the water jugs are full and out on the course, and I don't have a line of 40 people standing at Tournament Central, you know, just waiting to, you know, do whatever check-in involves, which, what does check-in involve? It's kind of like wave at the TD and then go back out on the course.
Yeah, it's kind of a, it's like taking attendance in school.
Pretty
just
much.
One person at a time.
Pretty much. And, you know, especially for the COVID stuff, check-in is, you know, it's a war zone of just a cluster of people standing around the table, and the old-fashioned way of doing it isn't really necessarily the best way to do it.
Yeah.
I've heard other TDs, you know, will have drive-through check-in. You know, they'll just send a volunteer to the entrance to the park with, you know, Tournament Central or Tournament Manager pulled up on their phone. And as a carload of players pull into the parking lot, just say, who do we have in there? All right, we got Johnny, Jim, and Joe. Check, check, check. All right, you're good to go. And if that's all that your check-in involves, then, you know, that's great. That's a fantastic way to do it.
Todd, before I let you go, any other big takeaways or pieces of advice you can give to anyone either running in or running a tournament or playing a tournament right now? What's maybe the last final takeaway you've got?
Sure. Well, maybe a couple. You know, when I've been saying, oh, you don't need to do check-in and you don't need to do players meetings, you know, that also means this isn't an excuse to be lazy here. You know, this shifts the burden from Saturday morning to, you know, Tuesday night.
Right.
And if you're doing a YouTube video for your players meeting, you know, you need to put some effort into it. Show some photographs, and, you know, a photograph of the hole with an interesting rule on it. Showing a photo is worth, you know, 5 minutes of you trying to describe it out loud. So, you know, still, as a TD, put the good effort into sending out thorough emails, keeping your communication lines of communication open. You know, send a few emails if you have to. Distribute the information on Facebook, on Disc Golf Scene, on email, on YouTube. And, you know, really, the final takeaway is, like, it was a better experience for players and TDs at the same time. You know, the TDs get the scores and the payout and their groups turned around really fast. Players get to keep up with their competitors, have fewer issues, get to see who they're playing with really fast. And, you know, overall, it's been a enlightening experience of everything that I used to do. Just rethink it and say, is this really the way that we should do it? And I know it's worked for the last 30 years, and I know it's fine, and it'll continue to be fine, but can there be a better way? And, you know, chances are you can probably come up with a better way if you just sit and think about it for a little while.
Yeah, and I give you and so many other TDs credit for being willing to kind of reevaluate, because it is one of those difficult things to kind of change the comfortable way things have done. But I think that's also one of, like, the silver linings that's come out of this situation is you and a lot of people have figured out ways to do it better. So thank you for joining us, Todd. Thank you for giving us some feedback. And obviously, if anyone ever wants to get a hold of Todd, you can hit him up through our contact form on the PDJ website. He's a I don't want to make his head swell too much, but he's a wealth of information for rules, events, running tournaments, and everything. So, Todd, thanks again, and we'll have to have you back on.
We'll 30 seconds here?
Yeah.
There's for the tournament directors out there, the tech team and events team have set up a Facebook page of PDGA event directors, and we're holding open office hours on Wednesday afternoon Eastern time on Zoom, where if tournament directors have specific questions, they can come hit us up with how do I set this up in Tournament Manager, or what's this new Tournament Central program, or even how should I word this rule? You know, I have a funky OB rule on a hole. Can you guys help me out with that? And, you know, we want to be available for tournament directors to use us. That's the point of what we do, is so that tournament directors can hold successful tournaments.
Awesome. Well, Todd, thank you again. And when's the next tournament you're holding?
Oh man, I think I'm off until November.
Oh, all right. Well, it sounds like you need to go.
Long break.
It sounds like you need to go run a tournament soon then.
I actually played one for a change.
Oh, how'd you do?
Surprisingly well. We almost beat the 14-year-olds. But they're really good 14-year-olds.
Perfect. All right, Todd, thanks again. That was Todd Lyon, our PDJ events coordinator. We'll be back here in just a moment on PDJ Radio. All right, we are back. Sarah, we're on another week of some hot women's rounds here for the Brewery View Hot Rounds.
Insane, and it's very fitting because I just broke into my bags of Sarah Hokum's sidearm special and Missy Gannon's mixed bag,
but neither of them are on the list this week.
No, they're not, but it's so hard for me to pick a favorite coffee. I just like them all.
That's a good problem to have.
I know. Yeah, the hot rounds continue to be extremely hot from the women, and I'm a little bit worried about competing against these people because...
I was going to say, you're going to have to step up your game.
I know. Yeah, when the fifth hottest rated round comes from a multi-time world champion, you know things are getting hot up in here.
Yeah.
So, speaking of which, that was Elaine King, and she played in the Eco Tour presented by Dynamic Discs in Fayetteville, North Carolina. She shot a 980 her first round to take first place. Great to see her name on the list. Next was Vanessa Van Dyken playing in the River City Open presented by Discraft in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Love that city. She shot a 982 her second round to take first place. And then the next three are all from Prodigy Disc Pro Tour Kuopio in Finland.
Kuopio? I don't have this one either.
All right. That's in Finland. And so Evelina Salonen shot a 986, her second round, and she took first place at that event. Kristen Tatar shot a 987, the second round, to tie for second with Heidi Lane, who also shot that 987, her second round. So congratulations. Super cool to see Kristen Tatar, Evelina, and Henna also play that event too. So
yeah,
awesome. They're all getting to play together. The hottest round was another round over 1,000. It was from Colleen McInnes. She played in the Christie Lake Spring Fling, sponsored by Dead Man Discs in Dundas, Ontario. Did I say that right at least?
I don't know.
Okay. I could have said Dundas and just Americanized it, but I tried. she shot that 1,005, her second round, to take first place. So congratulations, Colleen. That was super hot.
Very cool. All right, we're going to start out in Indiana. This is the Gibson County Challenge presented by GCVTB, which I think is Gibson County Visitors and Tourism Bureau. This was from Trevin Crow. He shot a 1073 rated third round to win that event. Nicely done, Trevin. Chris Smith shot a 1076 rated second round at the Cessna Classic in Wichita, Kansas. And he won that event. Nicely done, Chris. You know him. You love him. He is the bird, Eagle McMahon, with a 1077 rated opening round out at the Sparkman Monster. He ended up winning that B tier over the weekend. Nicely done, Eagle. He was the third hottest rated round. Back over in Finland, it was Vina Makala with a 1079 rated third round. He won the Prodigy Disc Pro Tour event over there. And out at the River City Open, Andrew Marweed. He of the using a cookie as his mini, Andrew Marweed. he gets an extra cookie this week because he shot a 1084 rated second round, and he won that tournament with a pretty stacked field. I have to admit, I didn't see Andrew Marweed coming when we did the picks.
I believe he won that last year. I think he posted that he took the win there last year. This.
Yeah, he beat Chris Dickerson, which is always a good one. I already had the page up. I was doing
okay. Okay. I was like, that was like double the time that I.
Let's see. Last year, he also did win the River City Open. So back to back River City Open champ.
That's awesome.
Nicely done, Andrew. So maybe we should have seen that coming. But yeah, I mean, beat out Chris Dickerson, Austin Hannum, Jeremy Colling, Reed Frescura, a lot of people. So good stuff. So those were the Birdie Fuel Hot Rounds. They were presented by Birdie Fuel Coffee. Go over to birdiefuelcoffee.com, use the code PDGARadio at checkout, and you will get 10% off your order. Yee-haw. Sarah, we got the Idlewild Open this weekend. It is taking place in Burlington, Kentucky, right on the edge of Kentucky and Ohio, pretty much, correct?
That's
right. If I got my geography right. What do you got? When is it?
Is
it starting
there.
Thursday or Friday? It's a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, right?
It begins Friday.
Okay.
Yeah, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Yeah, okay. So I'll get there in time. I'm leaving tomorrow right after work, and then I'll work from my hotel Wednesday and Thursday, and then have two practice rounds after work. So, but I wish I had more like five practice rounds because this course is tough. There is water in play. There is tons of elevation change. There is some OB lines. Rough woods,
like a million trees,
lots, well, maybe not lots, but a couple holes that have some tough dog legs right off of the tee. It's got a little bit of everything. And last time I played it, yes, we had that insane storm.
That was
two years ago. Everything runs together for me. That sounds, right? Yes, it was. I missed last year. Yeah, 2 years ago. And that is the type of course you do not want to play on when it's raining, because there are some pretty, so there's like compacted dirt on some of the fairways, on some of these like very elevation changey holes, and it's like a mudslide. It was not fun. It was not fun.
Yeah, I mean, this course is kind of one of those ones that people bring up as one of the, like, when we ask, you know, the most difficult on tour, this is definitely one that comes up. It's up there.
Yeah. I would say for the women, it's all about just placement shot. There's a few holes that I really want to kind of nail down this year. And they both occur right at the end of the round and can be complete round killers. And that's hole 16, which is a par 5.
Is it that long, like meadowy kind of one?
Yes. So it's just a long open fairway, OB on both sides, and it kind of, there's a slight hill going up, it flattens out, and then there's a downhill that goes toward the basket, but between you and the basket, there's a creek, and then there's OB behind the basket. There's just OB everywhere. And when I played it, I believe my scores were something like, I want to say 11-9-7. Or maybe it was 9-7-5. I think I might have parred it. Either way, it killed my round for the first two rounds at least.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things that unless you have extreme confidence in just throwing like a flat, straight shot and not going out of bounds, the best, safest play is just throw like a dump hyzer, and then go to the basket. So I am talking myself into doing those shots, and I swear that was my game plan going into this hole. And
you get some wind out there, though.
Yeah, and it was just crazy headwind the first two rounds that I played, and even my most overstable Wraith was just flipping over. So I need to disc up a little bit more and just have a lot of confidence in my... and just throw like a spike hyzer way over to the right side and just let it crash in three times. And then go for the basket.
Yeah.
We'll see. And then the hole right after that, hole 17.
Is this the one with like the snaky creek through it?
Yes. Yeah. So this one is extremely difficult. It's 418 feet, and you'll see a lot of people just throw the direct shot right at the target. A lot of the men can reach the basket, but it's kind of dicey. Like, you could throw a perfect shot and just nip off of a tree and land in that creek. Or you can kind of hyzer over to the right side, which is more open, but then it's very difficult to get a sight line to the basket from there. So this is one that I'm going to have to practice a few times while I'm out there and just kind of come up with a game plan. But yeah, round killers for sure. And then 18 is really difficult too. It's just a long tunnel shot out to an open field, and then the basket has two or three big pine trees right in front of it that create a really low ceiling, and it's kind of hard to get to.
Yeah, I mean, this kind of kicks off the because I guess I think Ledgestone is going to have Northwoods this year, so I mean, this kind of kicks off the beginning of the woods, if you will.
Yeah.
For this back half of the tour, you know, usually it's we've gone through a large stretch of the season. And, you know, you kind of had some open shots for a long time, and then you have to dial it in. Now, not as much. So it'll be interesting to see the adaptation. You know, and I guess we've already had, I shouldn't say we've gone, like, straight into the woods or anything. Like, Great Lakes Open has some woods. We had some people playing some tournaments this weekend, Mid-America Open, that got partially... I guess not canceled, but it got cut short. I don't know the course for River City. Do you have any experience with the River City Open course?
No, I don't, no? Unfortunately.
Okay. So, I don't know. But either way, and then we had Silver Cup. But, like, this is the first big wooded test, big wooded beastly course. Yes. of the back half of the season here, and it's going to be a lot of fun. People I know love watching this course. I personally... just, it looks so frightening to me. I feel I would go to this course and just, like, oh man,
it is, yeah, it's one of those courses that most of the holes are memorable. Like, I'm one of those people that has to play a course many, many times to remember even two of the holes.
Yeah.
And even though it's been 2 years since I've played it, like, I could go hole by hole starting at hole one and remember every single hole, because each hole just has some sort of unique feature about it. Oh, and there's also, I don't remember which hole number it is, but there's the ace run hole. It's like 200, where is it? It must be hole 9. Yeah, 250 feet. So you'll see
that's
aces
a fun one.
We'll
putter shot.
Yep. So the men are playing about a 9,200 foot layout, par 68, and the women are playing just under 9,000 feet, par 67.
Oh boy.
Whew.
Yeah.
It's gonna be
and,
fun.
You know, Deep Field, I'm kind of going back, just trying to, like, access my memory bank. We've had, you know, Kevin Jones won this one last year. I believe the year before, and then did Paige Pierce win? I should have looked. I feel really bad. I'm in this mode where, like, I just generally assume that Paige won.
Yeah.
But she won last year, yes.
Okay.
So Kevin and Paige last year, and then... Was it 18 where Conrad won? I'm gonna check real quick because I know Conrad had kind of a breakout. No, Conrad came in second to Paul Macbeth, in 18. Paige Pierce won again, and yeah, I mean, so it's kind of, this is like one of those, you've got the cream of the crop up there,
mm-hmm.
Competing. And playing really well at this one. James Conrad did win in 2017. That's right.
Okay, I thought, yeah, I thought I had memories of him winning.
Yes, and Paige Pierce again, 2017.
Yeah.
Paige Pierce has won it 3 years in a row.
This is a great course for James Conrad's rock shots. Like, I have this vivid memory of him throwing his rock on hole 18. And it's one of those holes that, like, for me, I'm throwing a driver, like a full-out driver, and he's just whipping a rock out of the gut. It doesn't even seem like it should make sense, but
yeah, he throws far.
Yeah, he does.
Well, as per usual, you'll be able to follow the live scoring over at UDisc Live, and then we'll have Jomez on MPO lead, GK Pro on FPO lead. I have a message into Jeff Spring to figure out who's doing MPO chase, and if we get that before the end of the show, I will tell you. But obviously, the information will be out there. And then obviously it's live coverage on the Disc Golf Network. Remember that you can get a discount if you're a PDGA member. Just go to discgolfnetwork.com, scroll down to the bottom, and you'll get the info to get that discount, because this is definitely one that you want to watch live. It's been really close the last couple years. It's kind of come down to the wire, and you know, we've had James do it, we've had Paul do it against Kevin Jones, if I recall, and then again Kevin Jones last year. Hopefully, I'm hoping we get a little more of a competition on the women's side. Sarah, can you do something about that from your own personal standpoint?
Oh yeah, I will definitely try.
You're gonna go up and battle with Paige Pierce this weekend?
Yeah. Oh, I totally plan on being on the lead card. Definitely.
I would love that. If you make it to lead card, I will be. I don't even know how stoked I will be. I can't even think about that.
I think I would have to have some sort of out of body experience at this point. Let's you remember, this is my first event of 2020.
Nowhere Let's remind to go, ourselves. Nowhere to go but up, Sarah. Nowhere to go but up.
I'm glad you have so much faith in me. I'm it's one of those events I'm just going in with like zero expectation. I'm like, I'm going to see my friends. I'm going to get out of this house.
Yeah, it's all good vibes.
Yeah, I have zero expectation.
Yeah.
That's it. Just don't take last place. That's it.
When in doubt, throw a Mako.
Yeah, a Mako is going to be my go-to. Makos and Sidewinders are going to be my go-to on this course, for sure. Yeah.
All right, well, let's do some picks then. Do you want to give us the quick update on the picks from last week?
Yes, although
we had some weirdness go on. Yeah.
We did. All these people dropped out. Of course, my picks dropped out. So, let's see. We did the picks on the Mid-America Open. And Lisa Fakus won, so you got 2 points for that, as well as Kevin Jones, 2 points for him.
Sweet.
And then Paige Hsu, who I chose to win, dropped out. And Haley King, who I chose for my FPO top five, also dropped out.
Do we know why?
I have no idea.
I don't either.
I didn't see anything on the social webs. I'm not sure.
And neither of them are playing this weekend either, so maybe they just
that's weird.
Decided it was chill time.
I actually played with Paige Hsu at Idlewild round 2. I cannot. It's so weird that I remember these things about this course in particular. I don't know why. What it is?
Well,
it's
a
special place.
You know, it's a pro tour event. You haven't played as many of those either.
Special place too. Yeah. And then I chose Adam Hammes to win, and Jordan Castro for top five. And let's see. Adam Hammes came in. Oh, where are you? Oh, Did second. He? Okay. Second. And then Jordan Castro came tied for 11th. So I got a whopping 0 points, and you got 4. And then our listener, was this Andrew Lockridge again?
Andrew Lockridge, yeah. We've got a new listener this week, Andrew. We'll get you back on next week, Andrew. He emailed us already.
Nice. He chose Haley King and Nico to win and Paige Hsu and Kevin Jones for top five. So he got 1 point for Kevin Jones.
Yeah.
So that puts us, you have 24 points. I have 16. Listeners have 18.
Oh, yeah. Well, you get to go first this week, though, right?
And I get to go first, yes.
Okay. So that's a good thing. Like, it's a pretty stacked field. We got the top folks out there. Let's do it. Who you got?
All right. I am going to go Paige Pierce, duh.
Sure.
And then I'm also going to go Macbeth. He took the weekend off, I believe. And I feel like he was probably knocked a little bit off balance at his showing at D-Glow.
Yes.
You know, getting in 10th place is not very Macbeth-like. And I feel like he's going to come back with a vengeance and take first place at this event.
Well, he could do that if Chris Dickerson wasn't going to come back with a vengeance, because Chris Dickerson came in 27th place at Idlewild last year. A very un-Dickerson-like number. He has come in like third there before. I don't remember exactly which year it was. I was just looking through to kind of see. But you know, he's come in eighth, and then he came in 2018, and then in 17, I believe, he came in third.
Okay.
Basically, what I'm saying is Chris Dickerson is much better than 27th place. He is good enough to win this event. He has the skill set. You know, this is one of those courses where I don't. There's somewhat of an equalizer factor in terms of like someone who might have a little more distance. That's not going to matter quite as much.
Yes,
you want control.
I agree on that.
You want the putt, and he's got both of those things. So I'm gonna go Chris Dickerson.
It's a good choice. And then who do you have for FPO?
Oh, FPO, that is, let's see here. Man.
I know who you're going to pick. I'm going to type it in already.
Who'd you type in?
Hokum.
Oh, good job. You read my mind. Yeah, I'll take Sarah Hokum. I, you know, a wooded course. Like, I can't pick against Sarah Hokum right now on a woods course.
No, definitely
this is
not.
This is like Sarah Hokum's spirit course, I feel like.
Yeah, I agree with that. Well, let's see here. Who am I going to go top five? Yeah, like you said, this is one of those courses that there's just so many different elements that come into play. OB, elevation, rough woods. Like, there's tons of score separation out here for sure. Oh, man, Valerie Mondejano's on the list.
Yep.
And she's one of the highest rated players.
I know, I was surprised by that.
I know. Well, we just don't see. I think she's racked up a fair amount of rating points in Texas, where she plays locally.
Sure.
And, man, Missy Gannon's done well here. Heather Young. I'm going to take Heather Young.
Okay. How about...
for the men?
Yeah, for MPL.
Let's see. Who do we have? Man... I feel like we keep picking Calvin Heimberg, and he hasn't...
Well, he is very good at throwing...
He hasn't delivered.
...frisbees.
I'm going to go...
He came in sixth last week. It was close.
Yeah, but I haven't been getting points for him.
You just picked him on the wrong week.
Okay, I got top five. No, I got a couple top five points for him.
Yeah.
I'm actually going to go Kevin Jones, though. He had a great weekend this past weekend, and he plays really well on this course specifically.
He won last year. Yeah, I felt bad not picking him to win on the back-to-back, honestly. I was going to take him as the top five. But I will go with James Conrad, top five on the MPO side. And on the FPO side, dude, Lisa Fake has been on a heater lately.
That's
true, won Silver Cup and Mid-America Open, so let's keep rolling with Lisa Fakus, top five. Our listener this week is Frank Garcia. Thank you, Frank, for sending in your picks. If you want to send in your picks, send them to radio@pdj.com. Our next event doing picks will be for the Ledgestone Insurance Open. Frank is going with Ricky Wysocki to win and James Conrad, top five. And then... on the FPO side, Missy Gannon for the win and Paige Pierce on the top five. I like it. It's a bold choice.
It's
anytime you
pick.
Don't pick Paige Pierce. I love it.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So, Idlewild this weekend, Friday through Sunday. Sarah, good luck. Get on league card so we can see you and talk about it.
Thank you. I will try. I'll do my best.
If you're not, at least have fun and tell people I say hello.
Definitely. Yes.
All right. We've got our favorite segment again, Run It or Lay Up. Sarah, I chose a couple from our list. I didn't want to go too big. I'd say I like just doing two each week. Let's keep it to
I don't hate it.
We got a disc golf and we got a food again. So
people
that's
like
good.
Their food. People have very personal
very
connections to food. Yes.
Yeah, it's absolutely very important. So the first, I don't know, I'll just throw it out there.
Okay.
First statement, this is our disc golf related statement. Smaller baskets are not a good answer for putting being too easy. This kind of harkens back to, you know, it seems like every year at least, we haven't had it this season yet, just because of the old, you know, pandemic thing. But it does seem like about every season sometime someone logs some crazy putting performance or putting performances, and people start to talk like on the pro tour they need to bring out smaller baskets to make the putting harder, and it becomes a big debate. So I think that's what this is all about. So Sarah, smaller baskets are not a good answer for putting being too easy. Do you run that or do you lay up?
I would run that. I agree with that statement.
Yeah, same here.
As someone who does not make all of the putts, I would not like for the baskets to be even smaller than they are.
Well, in our this was from Glenn Reiser, and he kind of caveated this. I just kept it to one sentence, but he also said, you know, putting isn't too easy, just a very few pros make it look that way. I agree with that, and I also think that if we had smaller baskets, yes, okay, so scores wouldn't be bonkers in like the 15 to 17 down range, but you're gonna, I am of the mindset that if you make the baskets smaller, you're gonna see a lot more laying up. And
yeah,
no one wants to see that. I think that smaller baskets would actually make professional disc golf less exciting.
Yeah.
Like, I want to see Ricky Wasaki run it from 100 feet.
Yeah.
You know what? I want to see Paige Pierce doing jump putts all day trying to go for it. And that's not going to land as often when you make the basket smaller. So keep the basket the way it is, people.
Yes, agree. As someone who has a bullseye basket in their yard and putts on it, I would not want to compete with that basket.
I was going to say, like, what's your comfortable range on the bullseye basket?
Oh, on the bullseye basket. Let's go 11 feet.
Oh, dang.
But I'm not sure my comfortable range is really that far on a regular basket.
I was going to say, is it 11 feet on a regular basket, too?
We'll go 16 on a regular basket.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, it's probably more comfortable than I am on a basket right now.
Yeah.
I want the baskets to be larger. So, all right, our other statement this week. Sarah, why don't you read this one for the folks? This is a good one.
Okay, this one comes from a former coworker of mine who will never listen to the show, but her name is Shannon Lindsay, and I had some debate about this one because I didn't quite understand it, but maybe our listeners will, especially those who live in the South, because I think that's why I didn't connect what was going on here. But her statement is, Miracle Whip is useless. And I'll just say, I don't think, so we were kind of going back and forth on this, and I was like, well, I think mayonnaise is disgusting, so of course I think Miracle Whip is also disgusting.
Yeah.
And then there's all these people that were like, Miracle Whip isn't mayonnaise. So then I found
out.
Well,
it's not. It's like
well,
sugar.
What is it?
It's like sugar mayonnaise.
No,
it's
that's
sweet.
Cool Whip.
It's,
no.
What?
That's Cool Whip.
No.
Yes,
what?
Sir.
No,
go
no.
Time out. You know even less than I do about this subject.
Cool Whip is whipped cream.
Yes, Miracle Whip is not sweet.
Yeah, Miracle Whip is definitely sweet. I have tasted Miracle Whip before. It is sweet.
It's something that you put on sandwiches.
Miracle Whip is made, yes, I know, but it's sweet. Miracle Whip is made from water. Listen to me. Wikipedia has this, Sarah. Miracle Whip is made from water, soybean oil, and the third ingredient, high fructose corn syrup. It's sweet.
I see egg.
Miracle Whip's gross. It's sweet mayonnaise. It's disgusting. It
okay,
does not belong
not
on the list. It's useless. This is
not something that you would put on a dessert. It still goes on savory items.
No. But it's, no, absolutely.
Okay,
not.
So it's sweet as in, like, sweet bread or, like, Hawaiian bread.
It's the analogy would be, dill pickle is to mayonnaise as sweet pickle is to Miracle Whip.
Okay. Well, they're both gross.
Yeah. Well, sweet pickles, Miracle Whip and mayonnaise.
No,
all of them can
pickles
go.
Are fine. Pickles are fine.
Dill pickles.
I don't
yes.
like
sweet pickles. No.
I'm fine with all the pickles. Ugh. It's the mayonnaise. Like it's flavorless. It's like globular.
It's just greasy.
It's pure fat. Like I don't need that in my life.
Yeah.
Not that
so
I don't.
So you've never
fat.
Actually even tasted Miracle Whip.
I'm sure I have on different, like. I don't know, if you were to go to a restaurant and they were...
I just love that I said it was sweet mayonnaise and you said, no, that's Cool Whip. I want to know what you've been doing with Cool Whip in your life.
Oh, I have a thing of Cool Whip in my freezer right now.
Oh, really?
I put
like
it on dessert. Well, it's because of the macros are better than just regular...
Mm.
Regular...
if I'm going to enjoy whatever. My dessert, I'm going to enjoy my dessert.
Okay, well,
if
you
I've
do
worked,
you.
If I've worked hard enough to get that dessert, I'm going to
oh,
put
yeah.
the whipped cream on.
That's a whole other discussion. I'm
that's
just saying...
True.
I don't know. So I guess it goes back to, I feel like this woman is from the South, and I feel like there is maybe an ongoing debate about this for Southern people.
Yeah,
and
I
that's
think
maybe
there
why
is,
I didn't get it.
There's definitely some
know.
regional use bias going on.
Yeah,
here.
Yeah.
I mean,
well,
there's
because
like with a lot of foods.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, so pimento cheese, which is absolutely so. Okay, here's Ugh. A good example. Pimento cheese is absolutely delicious. It has mayonnaise in it. But I would never seek out mayonnaise or Miracle Whip to put on a sandwich.
No, same here.
I would never do that. If anything, I'd put like avocado.
I'm trying to Google pimento cheese because
oh
I didn't.
Oh my god, it's so good.
Well, number one, I didn't know that it actually had mayonnaise in it. But the second thing that comes
oh, yeah.
up is pimento cheese with Miracle Whip.
Oh, interesting.
I'm not, none of these.
Why do people eat
good.
Miracle Whip? Is it just better
why? I don't know,
like lower
like,
calorie 65% vegetable oil by weight.
I just think that it's a thing that someone huh. put together and marketed to people and they thought it was good.
I would like to know what the shelf life is of these items.
Miracle Whip, oh I'm sure Miracle Whip's like highly processed. It's probably as high as mayonnaise. Oh here we go, it was developed as a less expensive alternative to mayonnaise in 1933. Thank you Wikipedia.
Okay there you go.
But
so there's a reason to it. Okay, so all of that said, I don't know how to answer this run it or lay up because I don't.
It's a layup.
It's a.
Oh no! Okay. It's a run it. It's a run it because the
oh,
statement.
Because it's useless.
The
yeah.
statement is
yeah,
Miracle
yeah.
Whip is useless. That's a
also,
that's a hard run it all day.
As well as mayonnaise
oh,
is also useless.
Yeah, I would agree. Mayonnaise can be well. No, mayonnaise has uses. Like
yeah.
you can put mayonnaise in, like you gotta sometimes use it in like a dip of some kind, like an artichoke dip. Or something.
I feel like that would be sour cream or cheese.
No, we definitely
yeah, artichoke
oh, and
dip
cheese.
Is cheese.
Oh, we make an artichoke dip that's like artichoke, mayonnaise, cheese, garlic.
Hmm.
And then
what
we
about
get
onion dip?
Really crazy with it and we put bacon in it. Onion dip, I don't really eat a lot of onion dip.
Isn't ranch dressing just mayonnaise mixed with seasoning?
I don't know the answer to that.
I believe that. Okay, so there would be a reason for me to eat mayonnaise. I don't need a ton
apparently
of
we
dressing.
Need to start a food podcast, like just
yes.
a food exploration. It is based on mayonnaise or another oil emulsion.
Okay.
Sour cream and yogurt are sometimes used. Buttermilk is
oh.
what
oh.
ranch usually has.
Oh, buttermilk is so gross when I think about it, because vinegar is like my least favorite thing in the entire world.
Yeah,
just I would lay that up
like
all
vinegar.
Day.
Vinegar is a good one. So you don't dye eggs at Easter.
I used to,
too
but
smelly.
I would hold my nose.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Oh, man, we got way down the rabbit hole on that one,
I know.
Sarah. That was fun. People, thank you for listening to our... Thank you for coming to our TED Talk about mayonnaise. But that was fun. And again, if you have things that you want us to check out for Run It or Lay Up or anything on the show, just send us a message, radio@pdj.com, and we will do our best to chit-chat about it. Sarah, I think that's it for the week. It's shout-out time. What do you got?
Yes, I have one, actually. I'm prepared. Earlier this week, if you are a female disc golfer, you are invited to follow a new private Instagram account that Katrina Allen has made. It's called competitive.cat, and it serves as a safe place, safe environment for women to learn how to take their game to the next level. It's been pretty cool. I think she's got close to 900 followers right now, and she's
nice.
Sharing everything from... you know, what she does before and after rounds, her mentality, how she got to where she is, what you've got to do, you know, sacrifices to get to be, you know, world champion status, some workouts, things like that. And I know there are some men on the Facebooks that were butthurt over it being locked down to women.
You could just end right there. You could just end that there were men on Facebook who were butthurt.
Yes, but here was my rebuttal to that is women make up and have made up 7% of PDGA's membership for years and years. And most women that I have talked to, myself included, have received unsolicited creepy messages from disc golf men over the years.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, yeah, all the time. So, well, I don't get it anymore because people know that I put those types of messages on blast, so I don't get creepy messages anymore.
There were really dudes saying that. Those are the people. Don't,
oh, yeah.
Forget the people right now who aren't going to wear masks. Or no, actually, no, do them too.
But oh, they're behind a different type of mask. It's called their laptop or their phone.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
Yes,
I think
so,
we need to have, like, Steve's shame list on this show next week.
Ugh,
just gosh. I'm just going to shame the people not wearing masks and the dudes who are complaining about a private women's disc golf
yeah.
page. Get
well, what
out
I
here,
said,
dude.
What I said is, you know, we make up 7% of the PGA. There are other, like, hundreds
of
pro
We don't need
pro
that number to get smaller
players.
Because dudes are
yeah.
trying to hit on women.
But
like,
there's like
on,
but there's like 100 to 1 male players to female players that you can go and learn from.
Oh,
so
totally
go learn from the 93% of male players out there in the world and leave the 7% to learn from a former world champion.
As I say, the only way that you could get jealous is if you actually want to learn from Kat. Like, if I could throw like Kat, I'd be stoked. So I get
oh, yeah.
it from that
I don't
regard.
Think that's where it was coming from.
Exactly.
It was mostly just, like, feeling left out.
Yeah. No, I
you
know.
Excluded and, you know, all that. But anyway, sorry, that turned very sour.
Dude's gonna dude. That's all good. No,
exactly.
It's a, hey, you
but
know
anyway,
what? That's
it's
a that,
super
Sarah,
cool
that's a real
idea.
Thing,
yeah.
like, that women have to deal with. And that's important to address, like, I think it's really cool that Kat's doing that, and I absolutely understand why she's making it, like, a private approval-only account. And, like,
yep,
more power to her for doing it. I think it's great. We need to have
yeah,
her on the
yep.
show again before I'm out of here, because we
yeah,
haven't
I
talked
agree.
In a bit.
She'll be here. Actually, she and Ellen and Austin, obviously, are staying here for Music City Open, so might be able to get a couple of them on the show.
Sweet. That'd be fun.
Yeah.
Well,
do you
good.
Have any shout-outs?
Do I have any shout-outs? No. I think I'm good. I got a little too salty there telling dudes to back off. So dudes, just back off, man. Treat the ladies
yeah.
with respect. It's all
Thank
you have
you.
To do.
Thank you.
It's very simple. But no, Sarah, my shout out is for you. Go crush it this weekend at Isle Wild. Have fun. And send my best to everyone who you get to see. Because, same thing
Thank
as you.
You.
I haven't seen a lot of our friends out on tour in a while. So I hope it's
I
a good time. I hope
I'll report
the
back
cooperates.
To the anti-maskers. I'll report back to you on that.
You know what? I feel pretty good. I think a lot of people, I think enough people respect Jeff Spring and what the Pro Tour is doing that I think
yeah.
compliance will be solid. So
I hope so.
I'm thinking we're not gonna have to be on the shame list.
Yeah.
It'll be
fingers
good.
Crossed.
Yeah. All right. Well, hey, that was our show for this week. Thank you again for listening. Send us your thoughts, radio@pdga.com. Subscribe, share with your friends, all that good stuff. And we will see you next week. Sarah, travel safely.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. For Sarah Sinclair, I'm Steve Hill. This was PDGA Radio. Be good to each other, and we will catch up with you next week.